Nigh unto 7 centuries past, there was a magical conflagration at the fall of Treafell, the Battle of the Black Barrow. Magic to blot out the sun, to rend the earth. Magic seen 200 leagues away and felt across the oceans. It was said that on that last day, having lost friends, wife, and battle, and hope, the Emperor Jorsen Alcestis took up the 2 greatest magical artifacts ever made or found. He was the first and only man ever to hold both at once. With them, his magical abilities, already legendary, were amplified 1,000-fold. He took in all the power of Ayurus and Kurok, and it killed him. But it didn't kill him alone.
What do you know of the Kokari?
I spoke to Ivor Voss as I drained my 4th ale.
I know about them. Otherwise, why would I be talking with you? And you know everything about them, so why are you asking?
I know what you know. What I don't know is what you think you know. And if you use that tone again, you'll be picking it up from the floor.
What tone?
That tone.
You broke my fucking tooth!
My knuckles, on the other hand, are pristine. Odd.
Hot. Barely refrained rage flares in his eyes. The boy picks himself up and takes a moment to master his anger. I watch his eyes closely.
There were 6 Kokari. 1 for each of Emperor Jorsen Alcestis' Champions of Light. They were created by Jorsen's Archmage, Ezra, during the Battle of Black Barrow. The Society of the Second Sun believes they confer immortality. The bearers of the Kokari can still be killed, but if not killed, you live forever. Maybe not forever, but at least 700 years, which seems close enough to me. Most in the society believe that you were originally Shrad Mardin, bearer of the Blue Kokari, friend of Jorsen Alcestis.
Friend? Did you have friends, Jorsen? I thought I was one, but now I'm not so sure. And you? What do you believe?
I think you were and are Eric de Ardrul, the bearer of the Silver Kokari, impervious to blades, and able to form them in your hands by thought alone.
There's a small rumor that Paulus Merritt might be dead. Something about him giving a fortune to one of my girls?
They were in one of Guinevere's houses, in a small, well-appointed library. She was wearing a casual blue dress that still managed to accentuate her curves.
Can you hush it up?
This is the kind of thing that can get worse if you try to quash it. Wet boys frequently disappear for weeks at a time. Sometimes they give money to their favorite rent girl, in case they don't come back. It doesn't mean anything yet. I don't know the girl well enough to lean on her and be completely sure what she'd do. So, I'd say we have 4 nights.
Who's next?
Saren and Jade Marion.
Ah, 2 at once. Siblings?
Husband and wife. More than a little crazy.
Anyone who chooses this work is crazy.
They have a 7-year-old son.
So I'm making an orphan. Fantastic.
They're already teaching him the business. Crazy.
Oh, so now I'm doing him a favor.
In this life, some people are finished before they begin, Galen.
You'll take care of him?
Her eyebrows lifted.
First you were worried for him, now you want me to kill him?
I mean provide for him. You're not going to put him on the street. He gets a chance, small as it may be.
Done.
They were beating the boy when Galen arrived, landing on a neighbor's rooftop. He supposed that should have made it easier. The Marion's home, bamboo and rice paper with a steep slate roof, was in a nicer area on the southeast side of the city. The home itself was small, but it had a large yard, surrounded by a high fence so their neighbors couldn't watch them train. It was oddly careless for two wet boys, but then Galen supposed if you had a child, it was hard to move surreptitiously between safe houses, and any robber who accidentally came here would quickly wish he hadn't. Still, odd. And it was the mother doing the beating. The boy was curled up on the ground and she was punching him, her fist stabbing in past his blocks, efficient, crisp, remorseless.
Will you serve me in this?
What are you doing, Achilles?
Serve me or abandon me, Blackheart. I'm going.
Galen leapt from the roof. There were good tactical reasons to do this. There were doubtless booby traps on the fence, on the wet boy's own roof, and at their doors. Problem with jumping, you can't change your course in midair.
Saren, move, quickly!
Saren jumped instantly and used his talent to do so. Galen's sword struck deeply enough that the blade stuck and was ripped out of his hands by the force of Saren's jump. Galen hit the ground off balance and rolled, popping to his feet and throwing a pair of knives at Jade. She stood still, apparently stunned by his appearance. The knives passed through her, and she popped.
Mirage!
Of course. Jade was a master of illusions. The back door of the house. Jade had already escaped. The boy had risen. He was staring at Galen, wide-eyed.
Sorry, kid. Nothing to do with you.
Galen jumped over the fence into the neighbor's much smaller yard, approximately where he thought Saren should have landed. Saren was in the yard, standing on trembling legs, leaning against a sapling for support. Galen's sword had entered his back and exited below his belly button. The force of the jump had yanked it downward, but it hadn't cut all the way through his pelvis, so the blade was sticking out of his crotch, angled down. Blood dripped off the sword's point like piss dribbling off a penis.
You won't get it.
Get what?
The red stone. The fire ruby.
The red Gakari. What the hell?
You're dying. If you don't make your move soon, you won't have the strength. Saren shifted, and a gush of blood and worse spurted out onto the ground from his groin. A knife tumbled out of his nerveless fingers.
Too late. Curse you!
How much does she love you?
What?
Saren's eyes suddenly showed a bit of real fear.
Because I want to know if I'm going to have to chase Jade down, or if she'll come back if I stand here talking to you long enough.
You're despicable, Galen.
Spare me.
I'll kill you!
Raising his voice, doubtless to cover the approach of... Galen threw himself to the side. A spear pierced the air where he'd stood a second before. A mistake. She should have attacked with projectiles. She thrust again immediately as he moved in. The blade cut his tunic as it passed between his torso and his arm. Galen locked his elbow around the spear's shaft, trapping it as he twisted, bringing up his other hand and snapping the shaft below the spearhead before Jade could snatch it back.
Give her this. She'd been overcome by emotion for a moment, wanting to kill him immediately so she could tend to her dying husband. But she was cool now.
She instantly lashed out again with the broken weapon. Unarmed, Galen dodged behind the sapling where Saren was leaning. Her strike rattled the whole tree. She stabbed at Galen, right past Saren. Galen dodged, then blocked, absorbing the blow and throwing her back. He ripped his sword free of Saren's back. Jade was blonde, with appropriately green eyes, hard and skinny, a muscular beauty. She began spinning the staff in great, fast circles, while she circled Galen. Saren had fallen to the ground, propped awkwardly against the little sapling. Jade made no move to attack, her face a mask of intensity, stance low, staff whirling. Galen would have been fooled if his eyes weren't so good. Kakari aided, but there was a slight shimmer to Jade's figure, and that spinning staff made no noise as it cut the air. Dropping low, Galen spun, attacking behind himself, his sword cutting a gleaming arc. Batting aside a shadowy sword as the real Jade, shadow cloaked, attacked from behind him, Galen's lightning-fast riposte cut halfway through her neck. Jade dropped instantly. His blade had cut her spine. Arterial blood jetted over his face as his sword slid out of her neck. The shadow she'd wrapped around her body retreated. Disappeared. The illusion of her, her distraction, her doppelganger, continued circling, whirling the phantasmal staff. Jade had split it off from herself when Galen had turned away to grab his sword. Then she'd wrapped herself in shadows and had circled him the opposite way.
Clever.
The illusory Jade circled all the way to Galen, intent on spinning her staff. At Galen's touch, the illusion fell apart. When Galen turned again, Jade was dead. Her illusions had outlived her.
Not so different, are we?
The Marion's little boy, Hubert, came running into the yard with a little, child-sized crossbow in his hands, crying,
"Father! Father!"
Not 10 paces away, wrapped in shadows, gathered in the arms of the night, Galen watched. With one hand, he rubbed his temples.
"Mother! Mother!"
The boy, the orphan, ran to her corpse. Darkness. Guinevere guided Galen to the basin, washed the blood off his hands. He knew he should snap out of it, but he was wooden, leaden, numb, dead. Jade, blonde hair stained into a black halo around her head, neck cut at a sharp upward angle from collarbone to chin. Charissa, petite Cenarian with brown eyes, expression blank, never again to show her quirky grin, dress matted with blood from a single sword stroke through her heart. Ezel, round Ymori face angelic, chest crushed, every rib snapped. Lythel, kinky Ladeshian hair pulled into many small braids, eyes opened, blackballed from the blow that had crushed the back of her skull. Hanan, still a beauty at 70, hair like ivory, smile lines by the dozen, the bruise prints of strangling hands around her neck. Dorella, her dusky, sethy skin, fine nose patrician, hair almost blue-black. The violence that had killed her hadn't left any marks. At least, not on her face. Fayima, features so demolished he wouldn't have been able to recognize the young princess, if not for the little mole on the side of her neck. Platinum blonde Anowick, Aelin the Fire Dancer, Kyr exiled Duchess turned pirate, and on it went. A line of women, young and old, his wives and lovers from over the centuries, all dead. All dead because of him. He turned and saw a line of dead children. His children. His dead. His fault.
You've come a long way, Tal Draken. Or is it Galen Starfire now? So hard to run from the past, isn't it?
The man sat astride his fine midnight warhorse, a self-satisfied smirker. He was the kind of man you knew at a glance was headed for a fall, but not for a while. Galen continued walking home,
You're a duke, not a dirt farmer. This is beneath you. You're a warrior. I want you to fight for me, Galen Starfire, and I won't take no for an answer.
Oh, yes, you will. Galen was working in the field, repairing his fence after the heaving and shifting of the ground in the winter, stacking the big, flat rocks back into their places while his big, shaggy aurochs looked at him quizzically. Sure. Galen was looking at the big one he called Orin. Pretend you won't try to jump this as soon as I turn my back. Galen found one of the boulders that had slipped and rolled from its place. He looked left and right to see if any of the neighboring farmers were within sight. They already wondered how he was able to do so much of the heavy work by himself.
Huh? No one.
He grabbed the boulder, and with his talent surging, picked it up and set it back in place.
Not bad, huh?
Orin didn't seem impressed. Galen liked being a farmer. Enough physical labor to keep him fit without the use of body magic, the imposition of order on the chaos of nature, the straight lines of plowing, the simplicity of his neighbors, who didn't ask anything of him except a helping hand once in a while for a barn raising. He fixed a full league of fence before darkfall and walked home dirty, sweaty, and happy. When he got home, on the big oak out front, he found his daughter and his pregnant wife hanged. He dropped to his knees. Guinevere held him in her bed, her arms around him protective. She stroked his hair over his temples. When he awoke in the morning, Guinevere was already up. She looked at him with what he swore was real desire in her eyes.
Take me. You'll feel like yourself again afterward.
Truth was, he already felt better. He'd slipped the memories off like a bad batch of mushrooms. But only a fool would turn down a woman as beautiful as Guinevere Kyrena. He pulled her into his arms.
There's only one kill left.
Guinevere was in her dressing gown, her cheeks still flushed from their lovemaking, but she was abruptly all business.
Who?
Skard Rabel, Galen. He's the only one who knows who you are. He's the only one who can guess what I'm doing. And he's been ordered to report to the Shinga tonight. I'm sorry to ask you to do this, but it's the only way.
Aruteiro.
It was an old wet boy tradition, an oath of non-aggression for 1 hour. The inn was dark, smoky with tobacco and riot weed, the kind of place where no one asked questions of strangers.
Aruteiro.
On the table, wrapped in a sash, were all of Galen's weapons. Ben Rabel set his sash full of weapons on the table next to Galen's. He sat.
I didn't expect you to know Aruteiro, Galen. That's old. Real old.
So am I.
I doubt that. I bet I'm older than you are.
How long we got?
I'm to report in 3 hours. So if you're gonna try to kill me, you'll need to...
I'm not.
Go on, Galen. Give me the dignity of honesty. I know Guinevere. I don't take it personal. Her back's to the wall. If you let me go, the other wet boys will... You already got the others.
Yes.
Even Jade and Saren.
They were tough.
If you don't kill me, Galen, the Shinga will order me to kill you. It'll only push your problems back a day or two, and he'll send the bashers and all the apprentice wet boys after you.
I lied to you about the symbol you cut into your chest. I have seen it before. It's a pictogram. Literally, it means split head. Moron. Idiot. Ben's face darkened, fingers twitched toward his sash.
I could tell you were lying the other day when you said you'd never seen it before. By the Night Angel's balls, moron. And I prove it by cutting the fucking thing into my chest over and over for 15 years. No wonder the Friarchy villagers wouldn't say what it meant. And you're an asshole for telling me.
Galen nodded, acknowledging the truth of it, took a drink.
Then I found this.
He put a pendant on the table. It was two horseshoeing nails, one bent into a circle, the other piercing it most of the way. Ben's lost pendant, the very one that had been taken from him when he was put into the Death Games. A quick sneer, like,
"You expect me to believe this? I told you what it looked like."
Was replaced by puzzlement. Ben flipped the pendant over, looking at the scores and scratches in the iron, matching them with the memories over a decade old. He looked up sharply.
"How did you possibly find?"
Galen lifted the pendant from Ben's limp hand. Suspended from the chain, the weight of the nail flipped the symbol upside down. Instead of being split from the top down, the circle was split from the bottom up.
"You were a kid. You copied the symbol wrong, Ben. This symbol means split heart. The one who's claimed half my heart. It means beloved, favorite. It's the kind of thing a Garathi war chief would only give to his firstborn son."
He gave the pendant to the wide-eyed wet boy. Ben put the pendant on.
"Damn."
Ben held the pendant in his palm, holding it like that, picking it up from how it naturally hung. It was inverted. That was how he would have seen it last when he was a boy, when it had been taken from him. That was how he'd gotten it wrong.
"You are something else, Gator."
"I'm still surprised you didn't put contact poison on the pendant. Every time I want to give up on you, Achilles, you do something like this."
"I memorized that book you gave me."
"What book? The poisons book? How'd you memorize the... How'd you even read..." "Oh, shit."
Ben looked at his empty flagon.
"You motherfucker. You took an oath. Arutero."
"Doesn't apply. The poison I used isn't lethal. It'll just knock you out for a while. In a way, I'm upholding Arutero, because now I don't have to kill you." Ben weaved in his seat.
How? How'd you do it?
Paid someone in the kitchen to dose both. The way I mixed it, the poison's heavier than the ale, so it mixes only in the bottom of the flagon.
But if I hadn't finished my ale?
"You always finish your ale, Ben."
Ben blinked, slowly, holding himself up with his elbows.
"But if you don't kill me..."
"I'll have to kill the Shinga. I know."
Ben's head slumped to the table. Shirtless, Galen's Starfire was arming. On the opposite side of the room, Guinevere Kyrena was dressing. He held up a light gray tunic mottled with black to his chest, looked at it in the mirror, rejected it for a black tunic mottled with gray. She held up a fiery red dress to her chest, looked at it in the mirror, rejected it for a sapphire blue that was lower cut. He strapped on a pair of throwing knives to one muscular thigh. She pulled on a silk stocking up one shapely thigh. He pulled a weapons harness around his shoulders, knotted it tight. A servant cinched her corset. He clipped on his mask around his neck. She clipped on a jeweled necklace around hers. He slid a knife into a wrist sheath. She spritzed perfume on her wrist. He looked at her in his mirror and found her looking at him in hers. He was an angel of death. She was a goddess. He bowed to the mirror. "Good luck tonight, my lady," she curtsied, face grave.
"Good luck, Master Starfire."
She didn't say, "my lord," but then she wouldn't. He jumped out the window. Galen jumped across a narrow alley, landed on the peak of a crumbling inn's roof, ran across the narrow beam like an acrobat, jumped, and fell 6 paces onto a lower flat roof.
"I am Sakage, a lord of the shadows. I claim the shadows so the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless."
He jumped into one of the few standing sections of an ancient aqueduct. Leapt. Below, a rich carriage pulled by 4 horses was rattling through the streets.
"The befouled shall not go unpunished. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. In ignobility, nobility. In shame, honor. In darkness, light. I will do justice and love mercy."
The man in the carriage was one of the 9, the Sonarian Sakage's master of coin, Count Rimbold Drake. Brilliant young man, perceptive but not ambitious. He'd stumbled into his position on the 9 by sheer competence. Gwynvir didn't believe he cared who was the Shinga, so this was mercy. Galen jumped across the street directly above the carriage. He flipped and whipped the knife downward at incredible speed. The blade punched through the carriage's roof. It quivered in the carriage seat between Count Drake's legs. Count Drake gaped at the hole in the carriage roof, dribbling rain. The dagger was 1 inch from his groin. There was a note tied around the dagger's handle. The Count took the note, the words written in a tight, angular hand.
"Not a miss."
Galen watched the men guarding 1 entrance to the Chamber of the 9. There were at least 6 entrances, he knew, but this one was the most direct. 3 of the men were simple bashers, just muscled to stop passerby from entering the wrong alley. Men good in a brawl.
"Will you serve me in this?"
Galen pulled the shadows around himself and crawled, clinging to a thatch roof, keeping a low profile.
"She's not a good woman. You must know that."
3 archers squinted against the downpour.
"No, but she's the least bad."
2 spotters stood on balconies, 1 studying the street, the other looking over the roofs.
"Giving power to the bad to fight the evil. A devil's argument."
Galen reached the edge of the building. 2 more bashers were right underneath him.
"I am a devil."
"It was to you, Jorsen Alcastes, administered the oath of Sakage, Akalis. You could lead the Sakage yourself."
"Leadership is best left to the idealistic and the arrogant."
It would be best if he could get in without killing anyone, but he couldn't do that alone. Not without the Kakari's help.
"Very well, Akalis. I shall serve."
Galen felt the Kakari form in his hand. He squeezed it, and it sheathed his entire body. He dropped into the alley. He wasn't quite invisible. Not in the rain that hit his body and gave a weird distortion to the air, but the alley was narrow. He came to the door. Rubbish was piled high in front of it to disguise what it was, but the door opened in, so the rubbish was no problem. When no one was looking, he opened the door and slipped inside. Inside, there was nothing but a short hall, a false wall that lay open, and a stone ladder beyond it. Galen got on the ladder and began sliding down. The 9 subterranean chamber was a horror and a wonder, a relic of a bygone age. It was circular, but with a ceiling so high it disappeared in the darkness, giving the impression that a person inside was at the bottom of an inescapably deep pit. The floors, the walls, even the stone desks and chairs were carved with every kind of loathsome animal. Rats and snakes and hydras and spiders and twisted dogs and skeletons. All glittering obsidian, sharp, cutting angles. The numerous entrances were well hidden. A crescent-shaped dais held the benches for the nine, and over them, the Shinga's throne. The only illumination came from an oil-filled ridge set in the wall behind the nine, casting all of them in shadow. But their hoods were back now. Some had shed their cloaks completely, like Guinevere. Guinevere's beauty was sword and armor both. Scarred Rabel had told Galen,
"You never get to see the whole drama. When you're a wet boy, you only come in at the end."
A tall, fat man was speaking.
"The fact is, I think we need to beware of this young Gaia Lord, Regnus. I don't think we can control him."
A muscular man, with lots of scars and a flattened nose, he had to be Pond Drayden, head of the Bashers, answered.
"I say we continue to support Bran Westeros.
He's too martial. The gun doesn't look..."
"Morons. Every last one of them."
"Where is Scarred Rabel? I thought he was supposed to report by now."
The one who had spoken was a hawkish little man.
"Enough."
The Shinga stood.
"I've dis..."
Then his head fell off. Nine pairs of eyes widened. For an instant, everyone was speechless. Then, the room was plunged into darkness. Galen flipped into the center of the chamber. Six of the men recovered enough to pull alarm ropes.
"Bastard, cut the alarm ropes!"
Opening the oil channel full, Galen waited until the oil circled the entire chamber, then ignited it with a spark. Light flooded the room, astounding in its suddenness. He stood in the middle of the chamber, Kakari coating him in a skin, his arms folded, head down. He opened his eyes, lifted his head, shrugged the cloak off his shoulders.
"What the hell is that?"
Death is coming for us!
The Night Angel was a vision of judgment. Big, frowning, narrowed eyes, blank face. Mouth a slit, skin slick, utterly alien, without compassion. The darkness seemed to ripple about him, as if he were a fire with dark flames.
"I am Tsukage. It is time for a change in leadership. Any questions?"
Galen strode to Guinevere. She expected him to kill her, become Shinga himself. He could see it in her face, her brave, haughty, furious face.
"Guinevere Kyrena, Shinga Kyrena."
Galen bowed before her. A moment later, recovering first, Count Drake bowed low in obeisance before her. Pond Drayden moved forward.
"Over my dead!"
Galen crossed the distance between them in a blink, and punched Pond Drayden's fist so hard it shattered all the bones in the big man's hand.
"No, not over your dead body, Pond Drayden. Your services are required."
A pair of stricken bashers carried the Shinga's body out of the chamber. A third carried his head. All looked very nervous about the figure standing cloaked in the middle of the room. They left as quietly as they could and shut the door behind themselves, leaving the figure alone. Guinevere pulled back her hood.
"Where the fuck are you?"
Galen shimmered back into visibility. It was just the two of them.
"You asshole! I didn't need you to hand me the Shadow Throne! In one more day, the last piece of my plan
would..." "I didn't do it for you."
"What?"
"I needed you to know I'm not a threat to you."
"So you do it by beheading my predecessor in the middle of a heavily guarded chamber? Pretty fucking clever way to be unthreatening."
Galen let the storm rage right past him. "Cool. I don't want to be Shinga. I could have taken it just now. You know it, and I needed you to know that I know it too. This work, working for you, suits me. I want to stay, and you are the greatest danger to me. Now you know I'm a tool for you, but not a threat to you. You don't have anything I want. Her eyes were hard. Then, she flashed a sudden smile.
I wouldn't say that.
He cocked an eyebrow. Of course he still wanted her body, but it seemed beneath her to mention it now. Too obvious for the subtle Guinevere Kyrena.
I found him, Galen. I found out where the man who killed your family is hiding.
And that's what took me to Chateau Cheyenne.
Baron Riku was the man who hanged your wife and daughter?
I stare at Voss, hard. Ah, shit. So there were some discrepancies in the story I told him. And usually, I'm such a good liar.
Sorry.
I've never given an interview like this to anyone in the society. He can't squander this opportunity. If things don't exactly match up, he'll just have to puzzle them out later. He's afraid of me, but he's ambitious, too. And too focused on the wrong things.
Can I see it?
I stare at him. He raises his hands in surrender.
Well, I don't mean to touch it or hold it or anything. I just, you know, want to see it.
I put a platinum ball on the table. Polished, lustrous, covered with spidery runes. I roll it around with a fingertip. Tiny blue streams of fire fill every rune. Then I snatch it back, make it disappear into me. His eyes are wide.
Lord Eric de Ardruel. Sir, it's such an honor to meet you. How'd you bond it?
Like it's a throwaway question.
Your own blood, need, and the Kakari's element.
Like it's a throwaway answer.
Its element? How's that work with the silver Kakari?
Easy. Got stabbed. Had blood, need, and metal in me all at once.
He nods, filing it away.
I'm gonna need you to hand over that Kakari, Lord D'Ardruel.
Why? You've already got the red. He blinks. And no man can bond two Kakari at the same time.
Ivor Voss talks, buying time maybe, trying to process.
It's for my sister. She's dying. We have, well, had, the same disease. I bonded the red on accident, and I got well. So I know it'll save her. You have no idea what I've had to do to get this far. What it cost me. What I've done. Now hand it over. You might be impervious to blades, but you'll burn like any man.
So it's not for Guinevere?
A quick grimace.
What do I care about some more?
It tells me two things. First, he knows Guinevere. Second, she really didn't send him after the Kakari. To learn that fact is the whole reason I told him my story. Most of it true. I figured Guinevere had to be in the Society of the Second Sun, or she never would have found me in the first place. But I didn't know, and I needed to know, if she'd tried to kill me for the Kakari. Immortality is a tempting prize.
That's really noble. Murdering someone to save your sister, I mean.
I just listen to your story! You're the last man in the world who ought to preach to me!
He does have a point there.
Ivor stands and squeezes the red Kakari into his hand. It covers his body with a slick red sheen. It burns away his clothing. He'll have to work on that.
Fight me! I don't know how to get the Kakari if you die while it's still inside your body.
I stand, wobble. Kids these days.
You poisoned the ale. You poisoned the ale.
Ironic, huh?
I fucking hate irony.
He throws a fireball at me. I bring up the black Kakari in a shield. It devours the fireball.
That's not the Globe of Edges.
And I'm not Eric Dayadrul. With a little sleight of hand, as if they're coming out of my skin, I produce 5 little metallic balls. Blue, green, silver, white, gold. They roll uncertainly around the tabletop.
You have all of the Kikari?
He's terrified but greedy too, not yet understanding. Counterfeits. For just such occasions as this, I roll out my fake of the red Kikari last. Fear in his eyes, despite the suit of fire on his skin. Confusion. The society only knows about 6 Kikari, and what he's just seen doesn't fit any of them. You didn't need to lure me here to take my Kikari. I lured you here to take yours. A conflagration. I'm hurled through the back wall of my safe house into the marsh surrounding it.
Oh, shit!
I knew fire might be a problem. That's why I chose this place. No need to burn down the whole of the Warrens. Not that they're much worth saving. The black Kikari coats my body as Ivor comes out of the burning doorway. Fireballs burn smoking, hissing trenches in the marsh. I dodge, flip, disappear. He throws a fan of flames in a full circle. I land behind him. He whips around, throws jets of flame. They curl around my torso, burning the night on either side of me. What hits me is mostly absorbed. The Kikari burns blue iridescence at every joint and curve of my body as it devours the fire. I ram 2 daggers deep into his chest. His Kikari drops into the mud, leaving him naked, mostly held up by my daggers. He looks me in the eyes.
I should have.
He dies. I let him slide off the daggers, drop into the muck. I pick up the red Kikari. There are no words. There is no light.
Nigh unto 700 years ago, there was a great fire in Treothel. A light so bright it burned men to pillars of ash many leagues away. That fire was Jorsen Alcestes. Madman, savior, king. The war was long lost before that last battle was fought. But fight he did, teeth bared, incandescent. A light so bright that the great men and women of age flocked to him like moths to a flame and burned. On the last day, Jorsen Alcestes, murderer and friend, took Kurok and Iris in hand at the same time. A lesser man would fear to touch one, but he, magnificent he bent the blade of power and the staff of law to his will. As Kroll, the twisted unmen swarmed over the last barricades and spilled through the streets, slaughtering women armed with little more than sticks, and children throwing rocks, one man fled who had never fled in his life. A Kaelis Thorn, unwanted treasure in his hands, left the fight. Under orders, he crept like a coward, outran the Krull who chased him, stood among the corpses and filth and cowards at the mouth of the pass into the Fazmeru Mountains, and looked back. The Krull were a black blanket pulled over the face of the burning city. Light bloomed from the castle's highest balcony. From 100 points, lightning cracked down. Every flying Nazgul dropped from the sky, becoming a smoking, bleeding rage. The bleak clouds rolled back in an instant as if shoved aside by giant's hands, and the light swelled ever brighter. Achilles staggered up to a group of deserters leaning against a granite wall at the mouth of the pass, catching their breath, weaponless, bloodied, their eyes dimmed, the eyes of the shamed and broken. But now those eyes reflected one sharp light. Those who had slumped now stood. The earth heaved upward just once, sweeping men and Krull and Titans and 100 other kinds of monsters off their feet. Even Achilles fell. It was as if the earth herself were flinging her power into this enterprise, into Jorsen Alcestis. And then, just as they all stood again, obliteration. Light that blinded, light that burned, light that boiled the bloody river, light that purified, light that roared. Blindness followed that light. Achilles knew only that it felt as if his very body were afire. Veins burning under his skin. Time shattered, scattered, thrown about, and blown about. He came to himself, and the first thing he saw was his own blackened skin. Smooth, burnt perfect black, like he'd been dipped in tar. Achilles stood, feeling curiously whole, unconscionably strong. There were pillars of ash around him, howling winds already blowing away the remnants of what had been men. Against the granite wall, etched by light, shadows stood. Ghosts of the men who'd been vaporized. One shadow was different. One shadow stood, defiant, one fist raised, edges perfect, outline crisp. Achilles's shadow. The others were dim, washed out, bleached by a flood of light that had continued even after the men who had cast them were burned away. But through all the fire, one man had stood. The black skin retreated into his body, unbidden, leaving him naked. His clothes and even his armor had been burned away. Achilles looked at leagues of wasteland. Nothing stirred but what was stirred by the wind. Death had taken the throne from Jorsen. A gleaming black dome huddled where once Traethel had stood.
Achilles, mourn later. There is work to be done.
The voice came from inside his own head. The black Kakari. It had saved him. It had been a secret gift from Jorsen Alcestis, who had told bullheaded Achilles Thorn to flee, to live. But Jorsen hadn't had said he meant Achilles to live forever.
I'll come back and take it off your hands.
Jorsen had promised with his roguish grin when he'd given Achilles the treasure. The liar. He was wan, washed out, but his eyes burned with a fevered intensity. He'd been spending every day fighting and every night with Archmage Ezra, making something. Never sleeping, working on some last-minute salvation that Achilles only slowly came to understand wasn't coming. Jorsen Alcestis, Emperor, genius, Archmage, tyrant. Jorsen Alcestis was a light so bright he left shadows standing centuries hence. The semblance of men burned under granite walls, and one shadow was perfect above all others. A walking, breathing shadow. A shadow as flickering as the ghosts thrown by a candle, as mutable as a king's promises. A shadow who devoured light and life. Light is, but a shadow undefined becomes simply darkness. And light had been too long denied the man who had been Achilles Thorn. He was thin, frail, a bowl full of smoke. He was becoming undifferentiated darkness. What if the light itself had been a lie?
Mount Tenji is the tallest mountain in Kira. When I was a kid, people used to make pilgrimages up the mountain. It's been too cold for that for centuries. It's a volcano, but it hasn't erupted in more than 100 years. Some smoke from time to time is all. I reached the crater on the 6th day of climbing. I'm buried deep in many layers of coats. The wind is blowing snow everywhere.
You're good for a lot of things, but keeping me warm isn't one of them.
You left off part of the Oath of Sakage the other day.
Noticed, did you?
Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down.
Jorsen Alcestis is dead. He's not coming back.
Gather the Kokari. Bring them all together. It's time.
Impossible.
Impossible? For you?
And if I'm successful, I have a fraction of Jorsen Alcestis' power and I'm unstoppable. He was my king, but I'm not sure he wasn't mad at the end.
The Kokari doesn't answer. It knows me well enough to know when I have to muddle through things on my own. There is only one question. Does what you do every day have meaning? Achilles had thought his actions did, once. For centuries, he'd put his faith in Jorsen Alcestis, a long-dead king. A madman who'd sworn he would return, even from death. A madman who'd left madness everywhere in his wake. Achilles had given his all. He was tired of giving. He was tired of believing. It was too much. It was finished.
He loved you, you know, more than anyone. Do you trust your old friend?
I stand on that wind-blown peak for some time. Not to be a god. I toss the red Kokari into the crater. I strap the sluices to my feet and head down the mountain at great speed. Ordinarily, the speed and danger give me a fierce joy, but now I'm a husk. I'm like the great sequoias of Taurus Bend, leaves still green, but the heart rotted out, hollow, waiting, just waiting for the storm to come along that will end it all. A mummery of life, more alone than I've ever been. The volcano won't destroy the Red, I don't think, but it does put it beyond reach. Either the Red will get caught partway down, but not all the way in the magma,
and it will be impossible for anyone to live long enough to grab it. Or it will make it all the way down, soak up as much power as it can hold, a huge amount, and then release it over and over. I'm halfway down the mountain when the volcano explodes. Guess it made it to the magma. I turn my back on the volcano as I've turned my back on my king. Fire pursues me, but emptiness can't be threatened. Emptiness holds nothing dear. Emptiness knows no fear.
His face in Guinevere's mirror. It's important that he do this here, so she can see it and have no doubts that the new him is really him still. But body magic hurts like a motherfucker, and he doesn't want to show her the pain. He drinks more. He's drunk. And it takes heroic amounts of alcohol to get him drunk. The Black Kakari negates poisons for the most part. A fact Ivor Vaas probably would have liked to know.
Huh. You're not as pretty as Galen was.
She is looking at his blonde hair, thin blonde beard, and pockmarked cheeks. She isn't pleased with his drunkenness, but at least she doesn't seem afraid of his abilities. This was my first face. My real face, you could say, if such a thing had any meaning for me. A Kaelis Thorne's face. A whimsical choice, perhaps a dangerous choice. But a shadow should bear some resemblance to the shape that cast it.
Handsome before the scars. A bit grim with them.
What looks like pockmarks actually came from the acid blood spray of a monster in the last battle, where Jorsen Alcestis died when Treathel fell. The mages at the time hadn't been able to heal them. Now, he doesn't want to erase that last memento of the man who might have been his friend. From downstairs, he can hear little kids. Street kids, guild rats, the slave-born who have no place to go. Guinevere takes them in sometimes. They call her Mama Kay. Right now, the wretches are bickering. Not exactly what you hope for when you're showing kindness, but often all you get when you show kindness to those who can't return it.
The captain of the city guard has reported you dead, without reporting your name. Anyone who digs will figure out that Galen Starfire was killed in a fire in the Warrens. There will be some rumors that Galen ran afoul of the previous Shinga, since deceased. A literal dead end.
Very satisfying.
So, what's your new name?
Durzo. Durzo Range. Spoken while raising a flagon to his lips. He'd often carried surnames that meant something, and it seems to be a tradition among some of the wet boys as well. Flint. Sharp, dangerous, brittle. Fair enough.
Durzo Blint?
From Flint to Blint. A portmanteau of flint and blunt, perhaps. The sharp and the blunt. A paradox, smashed together. Or just smashed. A descent from meaning to meaningless. It seems appropriate. He suddenly remembers Paulus Merritt's prophecy. Paulus had said blint too, hadn't he?
That's right. Durzo Blint.
Well, Durzo, I've got a job for you. Someone who needs killing.
Guinevere Kyrena is strength incarnate. perfection in flesh, utterly flawless, and somehow thereby utterly sterile, impervious. When he looks at Guinevere, he doesn't see a woman who will ever be caught off her guard. She will never be hanged, or strangled, or have her throat cut, or have her brains beaten out. She's too strong for that, too smart. Guinevere doesn't need him, so he can't fail her. She is the cold safety of a lean-to in the rain, not the false comfort of a stone castle that will fall on your head and destroy you utterly. She extends a scrap of paper. Guinevere likes kids. An odd juxtaposition. A scrap of humanity.
This is what I get. This is what I deserve. Scraps.
He doesn't look at the paper. He doesn't take his eyes off of hers, mirroring him. He doesn't care whose name is on the note. He doesn't care what they've done. I'll take it.
Perfect Shadow is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011 by Brent Weeks. Published by arrangement with the Donald Moss Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011 by The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. With performances by Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Johan Detweiler, Tim Getman, Ren Casey, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Joe Brack, Scott McCormick, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, and Terrence Aselford. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Perfect Shadow, be sure to look for Brent Weeks' Night Angel trilogy and R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars saga. Available now in graphic audio at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.